This is Darcy Ungaro, and welcome to the NZ Everyday Investor Podcast. Whether it's in property, Bitcoin, shares, or business, this is a show designed to equip the everyday Kiwi make better investment decisions. The NZ Everyday Investor Podcast is brought to you by podcasts.nz in conjunction with Ungaro & Co. Financial Services. Please remember, none of this is financial advice. We hope you enjoy the show. Rob and Jenny.
Hello.
Hi.
How are you? We were going to use Bob and Jenny. Sorry, Bob and Penny. Bob and Penny, but we're using Rob and Jenny. Real names.
Are you or sure are you they? Want to do this? Or are
yeah.
they?
Or are they? That's right. Maybe it's really Bob and Penny.
Yeah. We'll go with it's got a good ring to it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll get good hits. It's all about the clickbait. So, Bob and Penny, Rob and Jenny. And Bob and Jenny, Bob and Penny, Rob and... Now I don't even know who the hell you guys are. We're just gonna use you guys as a great example of just regular everyday people who have gone through the journey of home ownership, and you've arrived at a certain destination, and we're just gonna map it out. Cool. Is that cool? We're just gonna talk about it. Sounds- just for the listeners, Rob and Jenny have been clients of mine for almost 10 years now, I'm gonna guess.
Since the start of the journey?
Yep, since the start of the journey. I've been there at the start. Mm. Hopefully I'll be there at the finish.
Yep, that's you know, the plan.
Eulogy at your funeral, perhaps.
It could be the other way around. But
that's right. I am older, that's right. Let's start, shall we?
Yep.
But let's first figure out who the hell you guys are. So, Rob, tell us a little bit about yourself. What do you do for a crust?
I am a graphic designer, and I've been doing that for the last 11 years, straight out of university and into the workforce.
Good stuff.
Yeah.
And recently there's been a job change. Well, not really a job change, but you've changed kind of how you work. You used to be an employee.
Right. Yeah. I was employed by a larger corporation, and I've decided to go out into the freelance world and work my own hours and make my own money and determine my own future. So,
well done. Mm. Brave. Like, I think we could probably spend an hour just talking on that alone, but it's obviously quite a brave move. You know, you're in an employed position. There's some certain security there, a bit of a safety net, knowing that you just show up and you get paid. And I think for a lot of people, it's a real tough move to actually take the leap of faith and become self-employed. Was it like an aha moment where you decided, stuff it, I'm going to fire the boss and go on my own? Or was it a gradual, predetermined sort of move with you?
Definitely very daunting going out on your own after being in the nest, you could say, for 10 years. Yeah. But it was a gradual movement. I'd sort of built it up in the background, and then finally decided that I'd had enough of the corporate. And
Pretty big for someone like you, because Rob's always all about security and not that great with change.
No.
Yeah. Or planning ahead.
Right,
but I think the security was the biggest thing.
Okay.
So it was... Somehow he's turned freelance work, or the majority of his freelance work, into quite certain freelance work, which kind of goes against the definition of freelance work.
Right. So you've managed, Rob, you've obviously managed to structure the jobs that you're doing to almost, in a sense, work in partnership with the people who are paying you rather than just do a gig. You're actually kind of working with them, almost like you're more than just a contractor. You're more like a team player, right?
Yeah. I've worked with these people for a while, and having good contacts and is key, I think, and then just keeping that. Mm.
But good on you. Just a step of faith, and I think you have been rewarded for it, and I think you will be, so well done. And Jenny, Penny, what do you do for Crest?
I'm a project manager in the construction and advisory industries.
Okay. So tell me, typical day in the life would be?
Depends which time of the month. If it's a time of the month where we've got to be out on site every day doing PCG meetings, then I'm all over Auckland going out to different construction sites at the moment, verifying payment claims and work and basically administering contracts on behalf of our clients. Otherwise, I'm in the office doing the day-to-day, I guess, coordination and certifications and that sort of stuff. Yeah.
And outside of work, I know when I first met you guys, I remember you had a boat. You were into, was it water skiing, wakeboarding?
Yeah, wakeboarding.
Just water sports in general.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. But I noticed on your last application form, there is no longer a boat there.
No.
It breaks my heart.
Yeah. The boat sailed. Yeah.
The boat sailed.
Yeah, the boat sailed.
So is that something that you're going to pick up again one day, you think?
That's the plan, yeah. We'd love to, yeah.
Yeah.
In the meantime, we sort of had changed our hobbies, I suppose, and... But yeah, we'll definitely head back there. That's the goal.
They've just evolved from water sports to cycling. We spent a lot of time cycling in the last few years, but recently picked up a new hobby, and I think we'll get back into boats.
Good on you. It's great. Like I was talking to somebody today who was they were struggling to figure out what to do when they one day retire, and they were due with, you know, they were due to receive a lot of money through an inheritance, and they were just struggling for ideas, and the idea came up, well, just get a freaking boat, because if you don't have an idea on how to blow money and you're going to get a lot of money one day, just get a boat, because it'll blow it for you, right? It'll just sink.
Absolutely.
Literally, yeah. You will sink it in there, eh? It's a fantastic waste of money. Okay, now we know who you are. Now you're Aucklanders, born and bred.
Born and bred.
Yep. Born and bred. Your family's from Auckland originally.
Yep.
Okay, cool. New Zealand is a wonderful country. There's many wonderful, diverse places. And I guess as Aucklanders, there's this certain lens that we put on, and we may be guilty in this episode of making some assumptions that the rest of the country will behave like this as well. But what we're talking about may work in any really good area where there is good quality neighborhoods. And what Rob and Jenny have done is they've done well financially by owning property in good neighborhoods. And it's not just Auckland, but Auckland is a really easy example. And it's easy for us to talk about because that's all we know.
That's right.
But if there's anyone listening who lives in Invercargill or Gore, well, sorry about that. But if you live down there, I'm sure there's a nice neighborhood down there for you as well, where this may work for you too. So let's just start from the beginning. 2009. It was October 2009. I think it was October 2009 anyway.
Probably. 2009. We'll go with the year.
Yeah, we'll go with the year.
No, it wasn't.
Okay. Sorry. Who was it? No, it wasn't me, or it wasn't?
No, it wasn't October. Right. It was, it would have been before that property in July.
Right.
2009. Okay. So we probably met
before that.
Early in the year.
Good. As you can tell, Jenny has an eye for detail. This is good. Yeah. So when I caught up with you guys, and correct me if I'm wrong, Jenny, but when I caught up with you guys, because I know you will.
It was raining outside.
It was raining outside. Yeah. Okay. And there was a faint whiff of Chinese food in the air, I believe.
Malaysian.
Sorry. A satay, perhaps. And was it your father that was there at the first meeting, or one of the encounters that we had? I think your dad came along. We went to that
Cafe Cezanne or something.
Oh, there we go. Yeah. Look at that. Cafe Cezanne on Ponsonby Road.
Yeah.
No longer exists. Now, was it 23 years old when we first would have met?
Correct.
Yeah. Right. So I don't normally sit in front of people who are that young. Even for back then, you were probably one of my youngest clients I had ever. And you were in a fantastic position when I met you. You had $140,000 saved up,
squirreled away? Yeah, when we first met, maybe 110.
Right. And by the time you actually settled on that, on the first home that you bought, you had managed to save another $30,000 just between when you signed up on the contract and when you settled, more or less.
Yeah.
Amazing. So even just to have $110,000, like that's a phenomenal amount of money. You guys were on pretty modest incomes. You were a year-ish out of university.
About half a year, and you were a year ahead.
Yeah, rubbish incomes, really. But
I've got it written down. Shall I share?
Yeah, go on. Okay, so
Jenny was on $44,000. Rob was on $38,000 a year.
Yep.
So not massive, you know, big smoke Auckland incomes. These are really, really modest incomes. But you managed to squirrel away a very substantial amount of money. So how did you do it? Talk me through that.
We have we're just very conservative living. We watch.
First of all, we never went flatting.
Okay.
We both lived at home.
That was a huge help, actually.
I think we're both of the personality type where we've always saved. Like I've got a twin brother, and he would always spend all his money, but I'd always hoard mine away.
Right.
And Rob was quite similar. Yeah. Probably even a little bit more so.
You got a problem with saving.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah.
Compulsive
whether
saver.
It's money or anything, it's yeah.
Yeah. And then we also, I guess we had a little bit of advantage. We've been together quite a long time since college. So I guess we always thought at some point we'll probably buy a house. And having the little savings gene that we both have, the opportunity to save the student loan income that we had access to, we both saved that from the first year of university rather than spending that $150 a week and then having to pay it back. So effectively it was interest-free loan.
Yeah, that's right.
Mm.
So we had that in our bank as well.
This would have been the early 2000s, right? Like around 2004-ish?
Mid-2000s.
Okay. Yeah. So you were basically you were taking advantage of your parents' generosity. Yeah.
Yes.
Thank you, Mom and Dad.
Thank you.
Awesome. And you were also taking advantage of what was available to you, which was the student loan system. Now, I did the same thing, right? 10 years early, I was doing this, but I was not doing what you guys did. I was on Mount Tongariro, or where's the ski hill down there?
Yeah, Ruapehu.
Ruapehu, right? So that's where I spent probably half of my student loan proceeds. I was, you know, I was in business. I was making good money back then more than any of my friends, but I wasn't actually doing what you guys were doing. I have a recessant gene, which was not the saving gene. It was the spending gene. and that was it. I was snowboarding. I was having a great time. But you guys actually, you know, similar personality types. You like to save. You like to plan. Ordered.
Yeah.
Neat and tidy.
Yeah. Like to snowboard too.
And you like to snowboard too. Yeah. So you still had fun.
Yeah, that's yeah. right.
But financially, you were still, you were of the opinion that one day you knew you were going to buy a home.
Yeah.
yeah.
That's interesting. Yeah, so well before I met you, you probably already had that thought. That this is something that you're going
to
do.
Yeah. In my mind, I'd never wanted to rent.
Never wanted to rent.
I think my goal was to just buy a house straight out.
Not pay someone else's mortgage.
So that was huge in the back of my mind.
Right. And so tell me about that. Where did that come from, that belief?
I don't know. I just know it's dead money and I don't want to pay someone else's mortgage. If I can somehow set it up that I can pay my own mortgage and then, you know, increase my own wealth, but equity, then I'll do anything I can to do that.
That's good. Mm. Do you think that there's somewhere in there, there's a sense of independence, a sense of kind of like making it on your own, staking a claim. I can do this on my own. I'm not going to be the subject of somebody else. I'm going to be the one who's in charge.
Yeah, there's definitely. I think
a lot of Kiwis, that must be quite a strong desire, right? Like New Zealand is full of people, myself included, who've come here on purpose. And it's like we're staking a claim, right?
That's right.
We're starting, this is ours. And I think that's why the dream of owning a home is such an important thing for New Zealanders. It's hardwired into us.
Yeah.
And it seems to be the same thing with you guys, right?
I guess I had an older brother and older sister who bought houses quite young as well. So maybe, I don't know, maybe I thought that was the thing to do.
So you've got, you're coming from a family of, you've got
four
of you. Okay. Yep. Right. So you have one younger one and
one twin brother and then an older brother and sister.
Right. So going back to 2009, when we caught up, you had this amazing deposit. You managed to maneuver yourselves in a position where you were getting the best of what your parents were giving you, the best of the government. You were squirreling away everything you possibly could.
Yep.
And you came to me and we got you pre-approved for finance to buy your first home.
Correct.
Right. And then you went, I cannot remember, you'll remember, Jenny, but I can't remember whether you had found a property when you saw me or whether you were still looking and you were introduced to me. I can't remember how we met.
We were looking at properties before we met you. We met you through a contact. There was a real estate agent on a house.
Right.
Custom, it was on the house we
Custom
bought,
Residential.
Right. Yeah.
Gave us the contact to you.
Oh, thank you, Custom Residential. Well done. Good on you.
And then the rest is history. But yeah, so we got pre-approval, I think.
That's right.
Yeah.
Yep, you were pre-approved and you ended up buying your first home sometime that year. And it was for $415,000?
Yes.
Cool. And that first home that you bought, that was in Point England?
Yep.
Right? You lived in that initially?
Yeah, yes, we did. Yep. For about six years.
So you live in that property for 6 years. When you bought that place, you obviously had a mortgage. The mortgage was probably less than $305,000 because, like what you were saying, you actually came up with more deposit between when you bought it and when you actually settled and moved into it. So you had a mortgage of less than $300,000. You did really well. You kind of just worked on your careers and you stayed put for 6 years, you said, right?
Yeah.
So 6 years you were in that place. And I'm guessing in those 6 years, you were doing the same thing that you did that got you into the place. You were working hard. You were trying to repay the debt.
Yeah.
Instead of saving, you were repaying the debt.
I had a lot of pasta bake.
A lot of
tuna.
Had a flatmate for a year.
Yeah, so you had a flatmate.
For the first year, yeah.
So tell me about that. So how did that work? Because you mentioned that when you were pre-house purchase, you were staying with mom and dad, so you weren't in a flatting situation.
Mm.
But when you bought your first home, you got a flatmate in there, did you?
Yeah.
And you found that was okay? That was an okay arrangement? Did it work out?
Yeah, it was really good.
Yeah.
It was a friend of ours, and he just lived with us for about a year before he went traveling. And it just, I guess, going from not paying any mortgage or any rent, I guess it's more daunting rather than what it actually is. But just to help us ease into that, we had a little bit of assistance with some rental income.
Yeah, you go from having 100 and whatever it was, $110,000 or $40,000 saved to owing $300,000+. It's quite a strange thing to get your head into.
Right.
From always having money in your account to having none, owing a lot of money.
Got it.
So you want to get as much money as possible out of people to help.
So in other words, yeah, you're feeling the weight of this really heavy move.
Huge.
And then, but having a flatmate in there, you've got a little bit of money coming in, just takes the sting out of it, right?
And then.
But after a while, I'm guessing you felt as your incomes went up, actually, this isn't too bad.
Mm.
Yeah, well, that's it. Like our incomes sort of slowly went up. He went traveling And we were like, actually, we can deal with this. Mm. And it was really nice to have the place to ourselves as well. Mm. Once he moved out.
But. And you bought your place. So in 2009, and this is just a little bit of interest rate history for the listeners, interest rates were actually a little bit more expensive than they are now. Right. They had come down a massive cliff in 2007. They had kind of peaked. And then they came crashing down. Interest rates, I think at the time that you guys bought your first place, would have been around 6-ish.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, that sounds right.
So I guess when you first moved in, your incomes were low, the interest rates were kind of high. You would have felt it quite a bit, right? And then the flatmate would have really taken the edge off that. But then when the interest rates went down, your incomes kept going up.
Yeah.
Things would have got easier, and then you would have started paying off the debt. Even you would have been quite aggressive on the mortgage debt, right?
Yeah. As aggressive as we could be.
Yeah, so you set us up with quite a good structure, and that really worked for us. Basically, we put all our money into the mortgage, but it was a floating?
Revolving line of credit.
Yep. So we only took out what we needed to, but we always paying the maximum that we could.
All your money went straight into the mortgage first,
yeah.
Which is the opposite of what most people do. Most people goes in their main account first, and they spend whatever they can, if they can, on paying off their mortgage.
So we could see results. We could see it going down, which made us eat more pasta.
It was motivating. It was extremely motivating.
Yeah. You're not gluten intolerant, are you?
No. No, our standard of eating has improved as well.
Has it really? These days. That is good to hear.
Yeah.
Only because interest rates have dropped.
Can't face tuna and pasta anymore.
Oh, thanks for the low interest rate, eh? We can finally eat vegetables again. So fast forwarding then, 2012. I've got some meeting notes that I had to look at. So in 2012, we caught up again, and I got another application form from you, which is like a statement of position. That's where there was an opportunity to disclose what things were worth, how much you owed, what your income was. And from that, I saw that the property that you bought for $415,000, we were probably conservatively estimating that it was worth $450,000 in 2012. So 3 years later, the value of the property went up modestly.
Yeah, that kind of been through standards. The GFC.
No, so. Definitely, yeah. So that was like, I guess from 2008 to probably 2012.
Yeah.
Maybe 2013 at a push, was kind of the flat years.
Yep, wasn't much movement.
No, there wasn't any, but there was still action happening. I remember that the people that bought during that period of time, yourself included, that you were buying at the bottom, really, but it wouldn't have probably felt like that at the time.
No, not at all, no.
So do you want to actually talk to me about that? So when you got in, did you think that the timing was bad, or did you think that stuff the timing, it's right for us, so we're going to do it.
Yeah, no, what you said later, stuff the timing, it's right for us. We've got the money lined up, we had the pre-approval, we found the house at the right price, we just had to get in. Like, if we didn't do it then, you know, you're just delaying the inevitable. And you're never going to know when it's peaking or, troughing, so that was that.
Mm. I think it's really good to highlight that I think a lot of, maybe not even first home buyers, but a lot of people that are thinking about either buying their first home or buying their first investment property, they get obsessed with timing. And I think there's always a reason for you not to get in a property, right? There's always not a reason. There's always some negative media thing going on. It's going to freak you out. But you guys were just looking at your own microeconomic situation and making the best decision that you could for your world, weren't you? That's kind of what it sounds like.
Yeah, and we had a lot of things lined up. Like, we didn't go in blind because I'm extremely conservative. I had enough information that made me feel that it would be all right.
So 2012, your place is worth a bit more. You've managed to repay your mortgage. From my notes, I could see that it was around about $250,000 at that stage.
Sounds about right.
Probably.
Jenny's computing in her head and recollecting.
Yeah, we would have had.
Something like that?
Yeah.
Close to just
possibly,
say
yes. Somewhere
just
say around yes. There. Yes. Yes, Darcy. Fact.
Plus or minus $5,000. You then made a big decision, though. So at this meeting, and this is probably something that you had predetermined, and before we were talking, Jenny, you mentioned that there is a neighborhood called Meadowbank, potentially a little bit of a nicer neighborhood from where your first place was that you owned. And probably when you were first house hunting, you may have thought, well, one day we'd love to live here, but it was just maybe out of reach. So this next property that you bought was in Meadowbank, wasn't it?
Yeah.
So do you want to just talk me through the thinking and how you arrived at that? You paid $746,000 for it in 2012. Just talk me through that. What was your thinking at that stage?
So we came and visited you on a yearly basis, 3 years after our first house. You highlighted the fact that we could stretch ourselves and buy another house. You made us think about where we want to go. We sort of looked at some past trends and on property values, and it made sense to, I guess you explained that it made sense to buy the house you want at today's price rather than paying the value that it's going to be in 5 or 10 years, whenever you think you're going to be there. So that kind of got our head around that because we were always a bit too scared. We thought we'd never get into this area that we wanted to be in. And then when we sort of worked out how much we, I guess, what capacity we had in terms of how much we could pay. So we just started looking at houses, and we came across this property that we thought, yeah, we'd love to live here one day.
Actually, can I pause you there for 1 second? So before this happened, this meeting happened, kind of like glossed over it before, you were repaying your mortgage fairly aggressively, weren't you, before that? So your mortgage payment would have been higher than what it would have needed to have been, if that's good English.
Correct.
You were overpaying your mortgage, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
So one of the cool things that you guys were doing, and I'm sure this was on purpose, and I think this is something that I just want to highlight because this is a really cool thing about getting rid of your mortgage. It's not so much about getting rid of that evil mortgage. It's about conditioning your cash flow. And what you guys were doing then when you were getting rid of your mortgage is you were conditioning your cash flow. You were teaching it to get used to the future world. And then, yeah, you bought that future property at today's price, but it wasn't a shock to you, or it wasn't as much of a shock to you because you did the numbers.
Mm.
And yeah, that mortgage payment would equal a much larger mortgage. Obviously, you changed the components of interest and principal, but yeah, you could actually service a much bigger mortgage as a result.
Yeah. So what it came down to was when we looked at what's it going to cost us per year to own this property. Well, if we're paying down this much on our current mortgage, we can definitely soak that up in what we're paying down at our current incomes.
Mm.
So that was like a switch.
A light bulb moment, eh?
Yeah.
Good. And so this property that you bought, this property in Meadowbank, you didn't move into it right away, or you did?
No, we never moved into it.
So you never moved into it. So here's a property that was in a really cool area. You wanted to be in this area. You loved it, but you bought the property before you needed it, and you didn't. You actually refrained from moving it. You stayed in your first place still?
Correct? Yeah.
Right? So you're still in your first place. Of course, you were there for another few years, weren't you?
Yep.
Yeah. So you bought tomorrow's home at today's price. You parked a tenant in there, didn't you?
Yeah.
We did, yeah.
I think the main factor was that we could get more rent out of that place than we could out of the place, our home that we were living in.
Yeah.
And so, once again, the money, that was a factor.
Yeah, good.
Well, I think mentally we were prepared to do a few years. It's not hard yards, but yeah, just be disciplined for a few years.
Gotcha.
To try and pay down and make as much money as we can and pay off as much as we can.
Keep up with the pasta bake.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. Living in a less than ideal home, you know, when the ideal home was just around the corner. But
yeah. And I can't stress enough, again, this is 2012. This is a period of time in which the media was, I remember it was maybe only 2 months ago. I was doing a little bit of a research thing for one of the articles I was writing. And I stumbled across this article from, I think it was from 2010 or 2011, where there were some pretty big named economists for the banks in New Zealand. There were some pretty well-known economists that were saying the property market will never, ever come back to the levels of growth that we've seen. It will never recover. It will never be like that again. All that we've seen in the last 1 or 2 years is all that we'll ever see. In other words, 1 or 2% growth. Very sort of absolute statements from people that probably the media still goes to for input, calling it so wrong. And I'm not saying that to highlight the fact that these guys can't be trusted. That's not what I'm saying. But you were making a very bold decision at the time, a very big step of faith when the whole environment was not really helping you make that decision. The media wasn't really on your side at that stage.
No, it wasn't.
But there was something in you, wasn't there, that was pushing you forward knowing that this was a good move, right?
Yeah, it was pretty scary at the time.
Hugely scary. The purchase price, right? Yeah, it was quite sickening at the time, but
Rob's face was white at the auction.
It's still white. You are still a white man. I thought you were actually African American, but and you were just always pale when you saw me. But no, you were
because we were talking money.
Yeah. That's right. It's because every time we see him, we're talking money, and he goes pale.
So. Yes,
but you know, Chapman. It's not an African American name.
He straightens his hair.
That's right. Which is 1 inch long. So, okay, so 2012, you bought this property, $746,000. Then I don't see you for a while. Well, I do see you. You've been really good. We've been catching up every year now, pretty much since then, which has been awesome. And sometimes we make some changes. Other times we don't. Make a little adjustment here, refix a mortgage there. You've never really come to me asking for more money to top up your mortgage.
No.
It's probably been the opposite, I guess. It's been, how do we structure this a little bit differently so we can pay off even more? That's the cool thing about you. You've been buying more property, but your debt level, whilst it's been increasing, it hasn't been increasing because you've bought a new boat and bought a new car and you've renovated. You're like you say, I guess you're very frugal, you're conservative, disciplined. You know, these are all words that I've heard tonight so far.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, we certainly, I guess we didn't do certain things because we wanted to pay off our mortgage. Like, we didn't go on big OEs together or anything. It's been in more recent years when we've been a bit more comfortable that we could do some smaller trips, I guess, to some neighbouring countries. Or
it's not like you haven't lived, right?
No, we live a great life. Yeah.
We're not missing out.
No, so if you died tomorrow, you're happy with what you've done in terms of your experiences? Not that you are going to die tomorrow.
No, I hope not. I haven't.
But if you do, we've got insurance.
Life insurance, as we just talked about. No, definitely not. Like, obviously, it would have been nice to travel more, or, you know, you always want more. And probably that's how I'm built. You always want more. That's why you always buy more properties. But
we enjoy New Zealand, though. It's got a lot to offer as well.
That's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah.
People spend a lot of money to try to get to this country.
Yeah. Right.
You're already here. That's great.
That's awesome.
You know, and you're into outdoor stuff, so you see stuff that I think a lot of people miss out on, but New Zealand is an amazing place to be stuck in.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I think.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Yeah. Okay. 2012, after 2012, I see you again in 2015. Now, looking at the statement of position, looking at the application form, your two properties that you own are now worth $1.65 million combined. So in 2015, the market, and I'm pulling these numbers, by the way, just from, I think these were numbers that you would have given me as best guesses at the time. So these properties, when I say that they're worth this, it might not be.
Correct.
It might have been worth more, probably, because you probably would have undercalled it a little bit, mm-hmm. I'm going to guess. But in probably end of 2013 onwards, the property market really started to heat up again. The pressure started coming in. There just seems to be a lot more interest. It was cool again to talk about property. And everybody was into it, and people were upgrading, and people were buying rentals, and there was a lot more activity in that space. I certainly became a lot more busy in this space as well during this time. Your properties grew in value as a result, and I'm going to suggest that your Meadowbank property possibly grew in value at a faster rate than your first one.
Very much.
Yeah.
So different areas, different types of neighborhoods, and I guess every city is going to have different neighborhoods. Couple of points that you'd like to throw at me as to why you think Meadowbank did better than the other neighborhood?
It's more central, I guess. Slightly more central.
Okay.
Just a bit of a...
It's a well-known... It's a nice area. It's got good schools. It's one of those typical city fringe areas that does...
Close to the city. Yeah. Good schools, good amenities around the area. But the other place was just a little bit...
Tree-lined streets.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that works for me.
Yeah. The other one, the first property was not as desirable. It was one of those areas we bought in thinking that it would, I don't know.
An up-and-coming area.
That's how
gentrify a bit more?
Yeah, gentrify. Yeah. That's how we were sold it. And I kind of believed it and still do, but it's a much slower burn.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I don't know if we mentioned that the area, did we? We probably shouldn't, because we don't want to put down people that live in... that area.
It's not a bad area.
It's a great location. It's got a lot of potential.
You sound like a real estate agent too.
Yeah. No, it actually does. It actually does. Yeah. If anyone wants to buy a house.
That's right. You guys aren't selling now.
No, we're not.
No.
The neighbors are there.
Well, we'll always consider it.
For the right price.
Yeah, what are you going to pay?
That's right. Okay, so your properties have grown in value significantly, but your combined debt at this stage, I wrote down here anyway, $693,000. You would have obviously repaid a significant amount of debt between 2012 and 2015. So the extra property that you bought, you borrowed a bit more for that, obviously, but then you subsequently just kept on going with that whole debt reduction program that you guys had.
Yep.
I think it worked out. We paid off that first house within 4 or 5 years.
Right.
From when we first got it.
4 or 5 years, you basically paid off the equivalent loan amount.
Yeah.
Well done. Amazing, eh? So that first property, which at this stage in 2015, you were moving into you moved into Meadowbank at that stage, did you? Or
no, we stayed. We trucked on at the first house.
Yeah. So you're still in the first place.
Renting out Meadowbank.
So what were we doing in 2015? Were you getting ready to buy another place, were you?
Had another visit with you.
That's right. So tell me about
that. We thought we were pretty happy going at the rate we were going at. It turned out it'd been another 3 years and we'd settled in. Incomes had increased slightly again. More comfortable, and we could take out another loan if we wanted to buy another property. So you planted that seed again.
Right. So you felt that you had probably achieved quite a bit, and you did, to be honest. That was an amazing achievement. But at some stage during that meeting, I'm guessing another light bulb moment happened for you, and you thought, well, we could probably do another move now, couldn't we?
Yeah.
I think you asked us, again, where do you want to be in 5 or 10 years? Like, the original plan was to go to that second house we bought. And you said, well, looking at that second house for your future, is that where you want to be, or is there something else, and not one more step up? So we started thinking about that again, and that's what led to one more purchase.
Cool. One more purchase.
Yeah.
And I've got some notes here. Your income's obviously had gone up. And the reason why I want to mention the incomes again is that, yep, the property values have been doing great. You guys have been making some good decisions there. But also your incomes have been growing. You've been working on your own careers. You've been working on your own human capital as well, which is a really key thing, because to be bankable, you need to have good income.
Yeah.
And you both have degrees, right?
Like, yeah.
You'd invested in that early on, and you took out debt to do that, sort of. You saved half of it to buy a house, but you invested in yourself. You paid off that student loan as well. And your income was able to grow at a faster rate, but you were also probably quite motivated to get better and better and better at your work, right?
Yep. Yeah, for sure.
Because the numbers now, obviously, are you happy with me sharing what your income is at the moment?
Yeah. It's
combined income.
Combined income. I'll combine it and I'll divide it by two. No.
Yeah.
So, your income when you started was, this isn't that long ago. 9 years ago, your joint income was $82,000. $350,000.
Joint income. A little bit less.
A little bit less?
That was one of the amendments I made.
Oh, that is one of the amendments. Yeah. I can see that. Between 250 to 280. Yeah, I can see that in red now. Still a phenomenal, we're talking four times as much income.
Mm.
It's amazing. So, in a very short period of time, you've been working hard, not just earning money, saving, paying down debt, and making good decisions. You've been working hard in your own career, which feeds back into your borrowing ability, which enables you to do potentially one more move, but I'm getting ahead of myself. So in 2015, you bought another place.
Mm-hmm.
You moved into it?
We did. We toyed with the idea of renting it out and saving more money. But in the end, I think we reached breaking point. No, it wasn't breaking point. We thought we finally should just live. That's probably a better way of putting it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So tell me more about that.
That we weren't living. We actually did live very well in our first house. We just wanted to make the move into the house.
Yeah, there was also that, and also the house we bought was quite a I deem it a nice house, and I didn't really want to rent it out and have all that damage occur that happens with renting out properties. That was one that I thought we could live in and keep nice, and we could rent out the other one.
Sure. Okay. So this place, this Meadowbank place that you bought with the intention one day to move into it, have you ever lived in it?
No, we never did.
No. Maybe with some hope. Yeah, one day.
We might downsize to it one day.
Yeah, that's right. You still haven't achieved your goal, so I'm not really helping you at all.
I've always been a bit of a spreadsheet person. I did all the numbers and worked out that per year the income would get off this house versus that house. It was actually kind of negligible.
Yeah.
Or to us, it was worth that extra cost to live in this place that we absolutely loved, like fell in love with it.
So now you live in a place that you love. You love being there.
Yeah.
You've still got that property that was one day going to be the place that you moved into, but you also have your very first home, which is now a rental.
Yes.
Now, in 2015, we did a little maneuver, which we did mainly for tax reasons, the practice of selling an existing property into another entity, into a company, in order to make things tax efficient. And that's what you guys did. You took advantage of the fact that you were once upon a time living in that first property, but you're not anymore. So you sold it into a company. You restructured the debt so that the debt that you did have was very tax efficient.
Mm.
And effectively, you moved the equity that you had into the property that you were living in, which was the third property. So still living in this third property that you bought in 2015 for $1.23 million. Again, more than you probably ever imagine you'd spend on a property, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But your overall, I hesitate to use the word net worth because it's such a, I just hate that word. Net worth is such a, but I know what your debt level is now, and I know what value of your three properties are. And you've written this down here, Jenny, as well. So I'm just trying to read this, but 3.8 to 3.9 million is, what is that? Is that your?
So that's what the three properties are worth.
Oh, right. Got you. So you've taken that. And then if we subtract the debt that you've got, it's still pretty close to $2 million.
Yeah.
9 years later. And when you started, it was about 140.
Correct.
Amazing.
Yeah.
And you only have done three. You've bought three properties. You've worked your butts off. Sure. You're probably on the more conservative side of the spectrum than some people I deal with. And that's fine. You're still valuable people. You're still good people.
Yeah.
There's nothing wrong with that. But I think the biggest thing here is that you've kept every property that you've touched.
Mm.
You bought that first place. You didn't sell it when you wanted to upgrade. And even when you did upgrade, you didn't move into that place. You parked a tenant in there and you deferred that gratification. And then you were able to buy a third property, which was even better.
That's right.
Restructure everything, make it tax efficient. So take me to today. So we had a meeting today, and I know that, you know, there's work yet to do here, but where's your thinking? Like, after today, when we caught up, we reviewed your situation. It's magically on that 3-year time frame.
3-year cycle.
3-year cycle. We're 2018. There's been serious decisions, no pressure, but what do you think is going to be the decision this time? What are you keen on doing?
Well, as you say, in that 3-year cycle, we always seem to, we get, I don't know if comfy is the word, but we pay off another large chunk of debt and
our income goes up slightly. We just get more comfortable with where we're at.
And I'm now strangely comfortable in my mind with large sums of debt, which I never thought I would be.
But which is probably quite perverse for your personality type, right?
Mm, yeah, completely.
Conservative to the core.
Yep, 100%. It's yeah, like, yeah, 10 years ago, if you said you're going to have a mortgage of, or, you know, debt of 1.8 million, it's bizarre. But anyway, your equity offsets that. So coming back to today, we are now thinking of getting another property due to just where we're at financially.
Yeah.
And the market seems to be trucking along, like it's not going down, it's not going up, everything sort of lines up again. So
I guess for your situation, going back to the other decisions that you made, one of the key themes seemed to be that you make decisions when it's good for your own circumstances, not based on where the market's at. I think that's a really key thing to take out of this, eh?
Yeah. And then doing that, so I guess we see the advantage of buying at today's rate. When you look at the trends, buying at today's prices so that you've got something rather than buying it further down the track. And I guess we're doing it for the end game, which is to have a comfortable retirement, have some income further down the track.
What would you see, like, if you were to describe to people who are listening what your numbers look like when you retire, you know, forgetting, you know, any lump sums that you may get along the way, but if you were just think about what you're trying to create in your retirement, tell me what that looks like. So you're, say, 65 years old, for argument's sake. You've finished working. You're finished working for income, sorry. You're working for whatever the hell reason you want to, just because you like doing what you're doing, but you're not doing it for the money anymore.
Yeah. To be honest, I'd probably still be happy living at the house we're in. I'd like to have a couple of rental properties just so we have a semi-reasonable income. 3 properties would be quite nice, I think. So I've always had that figure in the back of my mind when I think about the income that you get off them at today's rates. And to try and not live in poverty as a retired person. Ideally, we'll be able to enjoy life. That's what we want to be able to do. So whether that's getting out on a boat or traveling or just living comfortably and not scraping by. And I guess that's kind of part of the purpose.
Yeah.
Ideally,
that's part of the reason why, I guess.
A bit more than comfortably.
I think that's why we play this game, the property game. But that reason and what too, I don't understand the share market. So.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I wanted to ask you about that because I think people who are listening probably wonder, you guys would be very, really typical of a lot of people that I see who have built some wealth. Usually it's through property, and I'm not going to suggest that that's the only way at all, but it seems to be kind of a natural fit for most people.
Yeah.
But have you guys ever thought about doing anything like that, like something in the share market space?
Yeah, I have. I actually have.
We like the idea of it.
More and more.
We've just got to educate ourselves more.
Mm, I need it. Yeah, you're right. But I'd need to do it, and I'd need to find professional advice and to set my mind at ease. And like, I couldn't just go out there and just start throwing money into different stocks and hoping that they're going to do well.
Yeah.
That's the conservatism in me, but...
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a bit of wisdom there.
Well, I guess real estate, it's not so volatile, is it? It's a safer, easier route to go.
It's absolutely not too volatile. And the participants are different. Yeah, like you say, it's especially in Auckland, but the participants are very different. You know, they're people just like you.
Mm.
These aren't institutional traders who are coming in and it's fairly straightforward to understand the rules and to play the game well. Buying in a good area is absolutely critical as well and all that sort of stuff.
But yeah, that was a good move.
Yeah, you know, with shares, I think that would possibly maybe be the next step, wouldn't it? You know, just to have a little bit of diversification once you finish building your property portfolio, then possibly that would be the next.
Yeah, definitely. I'm not anti shares at all. It's just because I don't understand them. So I'd like to be educated in that area.
Yeah.
So we'll listen to your next podcast.
That's right.
You will. Word for word.
Awesome.
Darcy said.
Now, I just want to cover off just quickly a couple of things. You know, for people who are listening, you might be thinking, how have these people done it? Or maybe you might be thinking, well, that's easy for them to say because they're whatever. And what would you say to that? Like, if someone was listening and they were thinking, you know, that's easy for them to say, but I can't do it because of this. Would there be any kind of advice or anything that you'd be able to give someone like that?
I think people do fritter a lot of money. And there's a lot of people that just live beyond their means, I think. And we lived a very frugal, call it tight, life, but we also had a good time while we were doing it. We were just clever with our money. We weren't wasting money. And that's all there is to it. Like, we're not super, we didn't foresee any of this. We're clever with our money.
Had the odd avocado, even. Yeah.
Even now. Just to remind you,
not so much this summer. It's been expensive this summer. But from time to time.
It's just being clever with your money.
I think we did. Sometimes it's hard. You don't want to talk about it because you think people will make assumptions. But we did. I do try and tell people that, well, we didn't do big OEs. Like, we got straight into the workforce. I'm not saying either way is right or wrong, but we decided to defer that side of things, and we haven't regretted it at all. We were kind of in a good position in that we were together, so we had two incomes. They were pretty small initially, but of a similar mindset. I guess we had a similar goal, so we both knew that we wanted to reduce that debt or buy a house and reduce the debt. But yeah, we didn't have big incomes, really. It's only more the last couple of years where they've increased. They're not big, far more comfortable than we were.
But the key message there, I guess what you're saying is that you didn't waste money. You know, you're being very careful and you're being self-controlled. You weren't suffering as a result, but you're being self-controlled. You were very careful with your money, and over time that pays dividends, isn't it?
Yeah, so. Yeah.
Take care of the cents, the dollars take care of themselves.
Mm. Yeah. And as I said earlier, it's the last few years that we've actually been able to do a bit more, like eat out a little bit more. We still don't do it that often. Or we haven't done a round-the-world trip, but the last few summers we've done trips over to Australia or been to a friend's wedding in Thailand, or, you know, we've had little trips. Yeah, we just kind of sacrificed a few things early on.
Yeah, awesome. Okay. And you haven't got children yet, obviously, but that's on the cards at some stage. Yeah. And so, you know, like I'm thinking, well, if I was listening to this, I'm thinking there's something missing. And you're right. There is something missing. There's no children. Because as soon as you have children, income drops down to one and things do get a little bit tricky. Correct. But I guess the fact is you guys started so much earlier than a lot of people do.
Yeah.
And that probably means that now when you do have children, you've actually done all the building already.
Yeah.
So if there's somebody listening who's maybe, what would you say to somebody who's sitting on the fence around property? Like, you know, I can't be bothered, or I don't think it's actually a good time to buy anymore, and I'm going to give up. Or what would you say to someone like that?
I'd say if you've got your cards lined up, just go for it. Even if you're a little bit strung out, just do it and just sacrifice some things. Initially, it'll be not painful. It'll be, you know, a different life, but in the long run, it's going to pay off.
Yeah, yeah. Cool. And maybe go for an area that, like, we started looking at certain areas when we were looking for our first house, and we ended up buying in an area that was, I guess, not the area we wanted to live in, but in the long run, it's actually got us to where we wanted to be.
Yeah.
By doing that.
So you did what you could do rather than not do anything because you couldn't do what you wanted to do.
Correct.
And if you look at the Auckland market, the and population growth still huge. There's a big housing shortage. I guess at the moment I don't think things are going to go really badly in Auckland for the next few years. I think we're still going to have growth.
I think it's a pretty reasonably safe assumption, but I guess we never know the future, right?
No, that's right.
And I know that like a lot of other cities in New Zealand they're probably benefiting to a certain extent because there's this displacement going on where people are checking out of the Auckland market and they're checking into places like Gore. And places like that, and those places indirectly are a function of what's happening here. So I guess that whole kind of dynamic that's happening here benefits the entire country and makes good neighborhoods in good cities all across the country kind of do well within seasons, right?
Mm.
So yeah, no, that's good. I think, is there anything else that either of you want to add?
I think the biggest thing we did was actually come and meet someone like you. We'll meet you.
Thanks.
Great. otherwise we'd probably still be living in our first house. We would have been too scared to take the step to buy a second and a third house.
Yeah, that's great. Cool.
Yeah, definitely get some good advice, and they can open your eyes.
Advice is key. Someone that can show you, or put even give you a little push, has certainly helped us, because we're both pretty conservative. And Jenny's right. We'd probably still be in our first house if we hadn't met Darcy. So that's a
nice little plug. Thanks, Rob. That's
good. Just get good advice, and you've just got to do it. You got to don't keep talking about it and pretending you're going to do something. You just have to do it.
Yeah, and maybe sacrifice a few things.
That's awesome. Good advice. Because I think, like, with advice, it's always easy to talk to Uncle Len. He's always got an opinion.
Yeah.
Or your friends, but what's their motivation? You know, are they trying to lift you up, or do they feel kind of jealous? You never really know, right?
So you don't.
Having some good, positive, not someone who's always just saying yes, but someone who's actually challenging you, whoever that is, I think that's fantastic, eh? It's really wise that you picked up on that it's about that external input sometimes just to get you thinking, right?
100%, yeah.
Awesome.
And I think, discussing it, we've had some pretty good discussions along the way with yourself, and then even especially we always have big discussions with Rob's dad about things. So I guess we weigh things up and we test things and
that's good.
Think about how it will work in different scenarios. I think you always say not to overanalyze, but I can't help it.
That's right. You're an analyzer. That's right.
Yeah.
Well, as long as you're using accurate variables, it's okay.
Yeah.
I think when you take conservatism and you mix it with overanalyzism, if that's a word, that's not a word, is it? You multiply the effect of the conservative assumptions when you do that.
It can be dangerous.
But obviously you wouldn't be here if you did that.
Mm. Yeah. Right? So maybe you aren't actually really, really conservative. Maybe you're just disciplined.
Maybe you're absolutely right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe Bob is a very disciplined young man, and he's not actually conservative. Maybe he's actually a risk taker.
Possibly.
Deep down inside. You never know.
I don't think so.
That's cool. All right, guys. Well, I really, really appreciate your time. Have a few more snakes and raspberry thingies and some cranberries. This is NZ Everyday Investor, brought to you by Angaro & Co. Financial Services and Podcasts NZ. And until next time.
Thanks, Darcy.
Thank you very much.
All right. Cheers. You've been listening to the NZ Everyday Investor, brought to you by podcasts.nz in conjunction with Ungaro & Co. Financial Services. I've been your host, Darcy Ungaro. Please remember to subscribe to the show, and if you'd like to learn more about what we've covered today or any of our guests, please visit us on Facebook. The NZ Everyday Investor contains information and content designed to get you to think about your investment decisions, but none of this is financial advice. Thanks for listening in, and we'll catch you next time around.